Welcome to the Local Exposure Podcast. My name is Ronnie Pettit, and I'm your host. In this new series, I will explore the music of Appalachia. I'll travel the back roads and through the backwoods to meet, photograph, and interview the singers, songwriters, and musicians of the region. And I'm going to do it while living out of a 1995 Suburban with my English pointer named Hutt. If you want to find out more, check out the website, localexposuremagazine.com, or on Instagram at local.exposure.magazine. All right, let's get this going. I'm going to open a beer. I have a Reformation Blueberry Ranch Water. I'm feeling feminine. What do you got over there?
No judgment. I'm going a little more traditional. I got a Lone Star.
Welcome to the podcast. Today we have Bryant Tinch. Say hello, Bryant.
Hey, glad to be here, man. Thanks for having me.
And in real life, you're a school teacher?
I'm a high school English teacher, that's right.
Nice. You don't look like it.
Thank you. Pretty sure, I think.
Yeah, you look like a regular hillbilly.
Oh, man. Thank you.
That's a compliment.
Absolutely.
So let's... Let's start with your background in music. When did you first start playing instruments and getting interested in this kind of stuff?
I mean, it's kind of like been a long sort of meandering process. You know, my particularly my dad's side of the family is really, really musical. The Tinches, they play guitars and evidently, you know, do a little bit of preaching and making moonshine down up the line. You know, some of them did all three of those things from what I'm told.
Nice.
So, you know, I grew up at my grandma's house, you know, when I'd go over there, I'd pick around on a piano some. I probably didn't get into guitar probably till high school.
Where was your grandmother from?
She was originally from up in Hiawassee, but she lived over in the Round Mount area.
Did you, I asked this same question to Scott Lowe because I feel like music is math. Were you good at math?
Passable. Yeah. I mean, I got A's in high school and then promptly forgot it. So,
did you get any kind of like training or did you just pick it up from your family?
Musically, yeah. I graduated from high school and I actually went to, I studied classical guitar for 2 years.
Okay.
Music theory. So, you know, that would kind of help me out with, you know.
So, you learn how to read music as well?
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, that's, if you don't let it get in the way, then it's useful.
How can it get in the way?
I don't know. If you start worrying about what's supposed to be right instead of what just sounds right, you know.
Gotcha.
You can never let what is correct stand in the way of what's good.
So, like, after you went to music school, how did you end up as a teacher and not a musician?
So I studied classical guitar performance and music theory for 2 years, and then I kind of fell in love with Hemingway. I remember I can tell you exactly where I was when the switch kind of flipped for me. And, you know, I read For Whom the Bell Tolls. It changed my life. I said, this is what I want to do with myself. I want to be a writer. So after I got my associate's degree, you know, I just decided I was going to, you know, write the great American novel. And so I just spent 4 years, like, you know, drinking and not doing any writing, waiting tables. And my buddy's like, well, if you're serious about writing, you should probably go back to school. And he said that to me at a time in my life that it really kind of resonated. So I got back into an English program where I also, you know, did a little bit of choral work and things like that. So I was always around music. And, you know, from there, I got married, had a daughter. And I was teaching for a while, and then we're doing kind of like a back porch picking at a buddy's house, and I played him a few songs, and he's like, cool, that's great. And he called me the next day. He's like, I bought another bass for starting a band. And so that was when this whole crazy thing started. I just wanted to play one paying gig where I was like the principal musician for it.
Right.
And I didn't have any confidence in my voice at all, so... I figured the one way that I could be the best at any song, and I mean, I think Bob Dylan says this. He says, if you write a song, then at that moment you are, by definition, the best in the world at it. So I figured, well, heck, I'll just do a whole set of those.
Nice. That's a good angle.
Sometimes you got to psych yourself out to do stuff like that.
Do you remember the name of the band?
Oh, yeah, Drunk on the Wind.
Drunk on the Wind.
Yeah. My buddy Jeff, he's the one who got me this wild hat. He's also an English teacher. And so James Dickey, a fellow that is both famous and infamous around Appalachia, for reasons we all know, he's got a poem called Cherry Log Road. It's basically about this guy meeting this chick to hook up in the backseat of like this old limousine in the middle of a junkyard. And so she'll come in from her end and take enough scrap home to make her dad think that she came here to salvage. And, you know, he rides in on his motorcycle and they come from opposite ends and they meet in the middle of the junkyard and do their thing. And then they leave on opposite ends, too. And as he rides off, he is drunk on the wind in his mouth, ringing the handlebar for speed, wild to be wreckage forever.
Wow.
Those are the final lines of the poem. And so having another English teacher in the band, we're trying to come up with a name. I was like, what do you think about Drunk on the Wind? And it just kind of stuck. So we still play out. We play 2 or 3 gigs a year.
This is a side note, rabbit hole. Have you heard of a band called Spyro Gyra?
The name's familiar.
It's like a jazz band that became pretty like cult famous. Well, he was my biology teacher at Kennesaw College, complete with the pen protectors and everything. And he was like, yeah, I have a little, we have a little band. We get together and it's called Spyro Gyra. And I was like, oh my God, you're such a nerd. And it was like years later, it's like, oh wait, they're kind of famous. Anyway, enough of that. So do you, I know you play around a lot, like you're busy. Seems like every week playing like local area shows.
I do. I mean, perhaps even shows is probably a little too kind. You know, when I play out, I'm playing wineries, I'm playing breweries, I'm doing a lot of covers. Folks that are out drinking, they're not necessarily there to hear what you have to say.
Okay.
So I try to honor that and respect that and play. I never play a song that I don't like. That is kind of my rule. And I memorize all my stuff, so, I carry it in my head. I don't really use anything else.
Oh, so you're not flipping through an iPad or something?
No. I either got my eyes closed or I'm, making eye contact with the audience.
Do people come up and ask for a song and you're like, no?
That does happen.
Give me an example of a song that would be like that.
Oh, gosh. One time I had these drunk bachelorettes like want me to do something by the Backstreet Boys. And I'm like, ladies, I'm up here,
Tell me why.
I'm doing Tom Petty or Townes Van Zandt. And they're like, oh yeah, any Justin Timberlake or anything. And I'm like, no, sorry.
I know it's like some people like cost you $100 to hear Freebird or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, standard. I'll play Wagon Wheel, Ketch and Bob Dylan wrote it, but it's like $20. That's cool.
How many songs have you written?
Over 50, probably about 30 that I feel comfortable, that I think are good enough to play out.
How many have you recorded?
Studio quality at 6 at this point. I got 4 on my EP. I've got MCT that we're here to talk about. That's my latest single that just came out on Valentine's Day. And then I've got, as of yet, one that's unreleased that I recorded that I'm really pleased with, a song called Carolina Life.
Does the EP have a name?
It's creative, English teacher, songwriter. I'm creative in that way. It's just Bryant Tench. Getting pretty wild and loose, right?
That's funny. And when did you release that?
I want to say it's like near the last of August. So it's been out almost 6 months.
Was that the first time you did an EP?
It was.
What's that whole process like, going from like, hey, I write a song, I sing it on my stool, and to recording and putting it out? Is it difficult?
There were definitely parts of it that was difficult. It was kind of cool how the ball got rolling. Another local musician, a friend of mine, Jake, he heard me do a live version of a song on that EP called I Still Cry About John Prine. And he's like, man, that's a really great song. You need to record that. And I just thought it was a song that I wrote for me personally. I didn't really think anybody would be interested in hearing it. And I would play it out, and people would kind of be moved by it. And I was like, oh, okay, well, this is cool. And then Jake's like, well, hey, let's record it. I've got a guy that can record and produce you. And so, you know, he introduced me to a good friend now named Stephen Phillips. And Stephen, you know, he liked the direction of the songs. We picked out four of them. And we just kind of went from there, and we decided how much instrumentation we wanted or didn't want. And as a rule, I tried to keep it pretty stripped down. You know, really.
Are you in like a legit recording studio that we all like have pictures of in our head of?
Yeah. Steve's is, it's behind his house. And it's pretty tight quarters in there. You know, he's got a live room, and then he's got his control room, and it's pretty tight.
Does it feel a little more intimidating when you're like in front of all the, you know, studio equipment?
Or? Oh yeah. Yeah, 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 yeah. And I mean, you know, there's numerous screw ups that occur, but thankfully he's a pretty forgiving and patient dude. And, you know, he knew that I hadn't spent a whole lot of time in the studio. So, you know, he was, but he could also tell that I knew my material real well and that I was willing to work hard and wanted to get something I was proud of. So yeah, he was really supportive in all that. And so he made what for me has been sort of a forum process, very, very accessible.
Do, like, when you're going through that process, is somebody, like, giving you vocal coaching? Like, okay, do that a little higher or lower or whatever? Or is it just sing? And
rather than pitch, and MCT is a fabulous example, you know, we would go through after we kind of, like, the guitar track down. So we're cutting the vocals on it, and I would deliver a line, and he'd say, okay, that's good, that's a keep, but go back and do it this way. And he might say, inflect that a little bit more. Or I'm pretty bad about cutting off consonants. Mm. So he's like, no, you're dropping your K here. Go back and get that, you know.
Okay. And that's helpful, I guess, right?
Oh, it's terrific. I mean, I'm really, really pleased with the vocal delivery on MCT. It captures all sort of what I feel are the arcs of the character that's talking.
We may as well break the ice here. What does MCT stand for?
Oh, Lord, here goes. MCT is stands for Mountain City Titty, which is the name of a real strip club that was located up here in Rabun County.
Mountain City Titty,
right?
Which is odd because this is an area where there's nothing like that. There's no nightclubs. There's no
way.
The nearest like strip club is probably 2 hours away, at least.
I'll let you be the expert on that. I'm going to plead ignorance on that.
What was your inspiration for that song?
So it's pretty cool, and it's the name itself. So I'm sitting around playing poker with some buddies, and I lost a really good friend that actually in my mind about half the time. MCT has two main characters. It's the speaker and his buddy. Who doesn't have a name in the song, but he's got a beer can RX-7. And I've had really three very good friends in my life that have all had RX. I mean, maybe being our generation, maybe you've got the buddy that had the RX-7, or maybe you might have been the guy, you know, and the fact that we're all still here and not dead is a miracle. But so I'm playing poker at my buddy's house, with the guy that had an RX-7. And another friend, I can't even remember how it came up. He's like, oh, man, that sounds like some shit that happened at the Mountain City Titty. And I was like, wait, what are you talking about? It was the name. It's like, I mean, it's the beautiful blend of form and function, right? And he's like, you know, there used to be a strip club out in up in Mountain City. I was like, no, tell me about this place. And, you know, he said, yeah, it's almost like a double wide, and you'd see some crazy, crazy stuff in there. Now, of course, by the time I knew about it or heard about it, it shut down. So, but I was fascinated with the name, and so I started asking around. And when I wrote the song, I'd interviewed probably four or five people. And kind of the difficult thing with writing the song, and I think part of my process is figuring out what I want sort of the tone of the song to be. And so, yeah, you hear about all this wild stuff, but at the same time, you don't want a song that's just like outright making fun of people. So for me, the trick was finding a balance that both had humor and heart.
Mm-hmm.
And once, it took me about a year to get to that point. I had kind of like figured out what I wanted to do on guitar. And I went away kind of for a personal writer's retreat. I was just staying at a cabin for a weekend and I didn't get much done, and I'm driving home. And I know that I'm going to go past the old Mountain City Titty. And so I'm thinking about like a 3-hour drive home from, you know, where was I? Up around Spruce Pine, North Carolina, a little bit north of Asheville. So I'm coming back, and basically most of this song, which, you know, recorded the last 10 minutes, almost all the lyrics came in that 3-hour drive home.
Wow.
I'd have to stop and write stuff down.
Oh, that's cool.
But I sat with it for, you know, year and a half, just trying to get whatever I felt was my heart right about how I was going to tell this story and where it was going to go. So, yeah, that's kind of how it came about.
And it was actually called, like, something Gentleman's Club, or...
It was called the Playhouse Gentleman's Club.
Yes, Playhouse.
Now, you sound like you're speaking from, you know, maybe experiences. Yeah, is there something you want to tell us here? It's all right. Take a sip of your beer.
Oh, my God. The first time I heard you play this song was at the brewery where I was working. And you know, it was like all the kids were gone, so you played it. And I was just beside myself because I had been to the Mountain City Titty twice. The first time I walked in and went, oh, crap, and left. And the second time was...
You said, oh, crap, and stayed, right?
Yeah. It was for, like, somebody's birthday. So it's like, you know, we're going to the Mountain City Titty. I'm like, okay. And my experience was not unlike your song. It was there are similarities. So, and it looks like a double wide trailer that somebody put something around the foundation to make it not look like one.
Right.
But when you go inside, that's the feel. There's like the smoke line is about head high. So you gotta kind of like squat down to see all the way across the room, and you could get like, I think it was a $20, $10 cover. And we walk inside, there's nobody in there. There's like not even a girl on the stage because there's no customers. And there's like three men that like work there. And you get a beer and he pulls like a Budweiser out of a cooler. It was bad.
Well, yeah, I guess they, since it's like was unincorporated right there, they probably had to like do some gymnastics with alcohol, I bet.
Yeah. And next door was like a pool hall.
Yeah.
And
yeah, so MCT is the building as you face it. It's the one on the left, the smaller one,
yes,
right?
Yes. And so it kind of starts out with you go to the pool hall, drink some Budweiser or PBR, and then like, invariably, the owner's like, hey, why don't y'all go next door? You know, kind of like, it's like a scam where they get you in on one side and they send you next door to pay the cover charge. But I went in there. It was me and one other guy sitting around the stage, which the stage was like 10 by 10 with one pole in the middle. It was small.
So, like, if I'm looking at it, like, where was the stage? Because technically, I've never been in the building. I've looked in the windows.
If you walk in the front door... And you know, left to right, the stage is on the left.
Okay.
Big open, you know, carpeted, I guess you could say, air quotes, dance floor. And then a bar over there to the right.
Carpet in a strip club, great idea.
This girl was dancing. She wasn't smiling, so I don't know what her dental situation was. But her boyfriend was sitting right behind us at a table. He was just leaned up, kind of like not sitting in the chair, just kind of leaned on the chair with his elbow on the table, just watching. And I was like, you know, because I saw her go over there and talk to him. And I was like, this feels awkward. Well, she's dancing and she didn't have much to, you know, shake, I guess you put it that way. But she started coaching me on what to do. And honestly, I've only been to like, that would have been like the third time I'd never been to like a strip club. So I didn't really know what to do anyway. But so she, you know, I tried to hand her a dollar. She took it and creased it long ways and handed it back to me. And she points at her nose, like, put it on your nose. It's like, what? put it on your nose and lean back. I was like, what? So she told me what to do. I put it on my nose, leaned back. That girl squatted down and clamped that dollar up with her something.
Wow.
She snatched that dollar up with her... I don't know if it was her coochie or her butt cheeks, but she picked that dollar up off of my face. Oh, my God. And then...
This is therapeutic for you to talk about this now, right?
It's really embarrassing, but it was just funny. So as she left the stage, I said, how much for a private dance? Just because I was already, you know...
Budweiser.
Yeah. And... she said $20 or something and left, and I didn't think anything of it. So the next lovely lady comes out on stage, and we're there. She's behind me arguing with her boyfriend. So some time goes by, and she comes by and like slaps me on the shoulder, not even smiling still. Like, come on, let's go. I was like, oh, I'm good, never mind. Goes, oh, no. You said you wanted a private dance. Come on. And I was like, oh, man, I'm about to buy some timeshare or something. So we went into the back, and it was exactly like in your song. It was like a closet.
Oh, my gosh.
It's a little bitty room with a stool and like a black curtain. And it was no bigger than a nice shower stall. It was, and I was like, man, I'm gonna get robbed or stabbed or something. And so she starts dancing, and I start to put my hands on her waist, and she's like, no touching, no touching. I was like, what? $20, and I was pretty drunk at this point. I was like, $20, no touching? I said, can I hold your boobies? So she turned around and danced while I held her Mountain City titties.
But, so I got to ask, did you have any interaction with the boyfriend or see him after this?
Well, when we walked, we had to walk right by him as we left the secret special room. Or a
VIP closet.
The VIP closet. And so I'm like, oh, don't make eye contact. Don't make eye contact, because I know he's watching us. But, dude, I came strutting out of that room like a cowboy. It's like, yeah. And I didn't look at him, but in my mind, I was like, I touched your girlfriend's titties. I touched your girlfriend's titties.
This is so wild, because you and I, this is the first time I've ever heard this story. And I mean, it's about half of the plot of the song. And
it's uncanny that you got it so right.
I mean, yeah, like I said, I interviewed probably four or five people, and not all of it's even, you know, I mean, there's none of this ever really happened. And to hear you tell that story is pretty crazy, man.
I mean, I don't tell this to everyone.
That's why we're putting it on a podcast, right?
I felt compelled because of the song, but... We left immediately after that, but
probably a good move.
It was a good move.
Back in my younger, more foolish days, I had my share of wild escapades, but nothing like my night at the Playhouse Gentlemen's Club. I figured that was a proper name, as its owner saw it, but the Mountain City Titties all the locals had called it. Which one's more fitting? Well, you can be the judge. My buddy had a monster. Man, that thing fly. A little beer can RX-7, it's wonder we didn't die. Burning up those mountain roads, chasing love, liquor, and scent. Well, he wound her up, and we headed north. I reckon me and good judgment had long been divorced. In a curve on two wheels, he saw it, swung her on then. It was long about then that my good feeling faded. One more than a double wide, dented and dated. I said, hey man, come on, let's go home, I think I've seen enough. Well, he just shook his head, pointed to a sign. Said the steel's broken, boys. Bring your own shine, but don't worry. We got plenty of jugs. Ain't no one saying that it's pretty, but it's always a pretty damn good time. At that mountain city titty, right on across that old Raven County line. The man at the door, he said, boy, you got a knife? I said, no, sir, no, swear on my life. He said, well, you better go back outside and get you one. So I went back out of the car and I found my buddy's Barlow. It was almost 5 inches in the way the blades go. Hell, if I'd known what was coming, I'd have kept out there looking for his gun. The cover, it was $3. It was cheaper than sin. Figured they kept it that low to keep the riffraff in. I sat down at a table, saw something I wished I could forget. There were 4 unmatched breasts right in front of me. One girl, she had an A, a B, the other a C and a D. As they bounced side by side, I couldn't help but singing the alphabet. And there was another old gal, she was doing something on stage. Seemed like maybe George Law Wallace was the last guy she laid. She had a trick with a roll of quarters, it's best not explained. And there were a couple old fellas, they were shooting pool in the back. One gave her $1 while the other one racked. And damn, without using her hands, she made him his change. Ain't no one saying that it's pretty, but it's always a pretty damn good time. At that mountain city titty, right on across that old Raven County line. Quarters, she said to my buddy, you a doctor, you a soldier. I can tell by your style, boy, you a high roller. She asked him if he didn't want to go back to the VIP closet with her. Well, he politely declined, said that he had to clap. She just smiled, gave her old lips a smack. She said, hell, son, there ain't nothing that laughter and corn liquor can't cure. And I knew with medical facts, it wouldn't get too far. So I sat down, ordering up another cold PBR, and watched them old boys in back, shooting their pool. And there across the room, couldn't trust my sight. A thin pale angel in the shadow and light, wearing nothing but neon, she's a vision, knocked me plumb off my stool. And I couldn't wait, so I walked on over. When she leaned down, I said, I'd like to know her. Could I buy her a drink whenever she finished her song? Well, she just nodded and smiled into my disbelief. That poor girl, she had more fingers than teeth. Around about then, I noticed one of her pinkies was gone. Ain't no one saying that it's pretty, but it's always pretty damn good time. At that mountain city titty, right on across that old Raven County line. Said my name's Candy, and I had to repent when I thought to myself, hell, that's where your teeth went. But she was a nice enough girl as she sat there sipping on her pink wine. But then her face changed as she looked at the door. She said, oh God, it's my ex. He was 6'6", maybe more. She said his name's Hoss, and he's kind of the jealous kind. And with her eyes, she motioned toward the back door. We crawled under the table and out across the floor and in the back parking lot. Well, who do you reckon I'd find? Well, Quarter, she was sitting on the hood of a truck, but she took the paint off when she stood up. My buddy said, damn, girl, that ain't the kind of stripping that we had in mind. And then Hossie rounded the corner. He was breathing real heavy. His face got red when he saw his Chevy. I turned around and realized I was standing alone. See, Hossie had a snake's eyes and his boot tips were steel. Each time he exhaled, it's like a paper mill.
Well, boy, I reckon this is the end of your road.
And I knew what was coming. So I closed my eyes, I was already mourning. My mama'd find out where I died. Cussed, praying, I stood waiting on that first and final blow. But then in a haze of fumes and gravel, my buddy pulled up, slung his car door open, hit Hoss in the nuts. I dove clean over his hood and right through the open window. And we were doing 110 down 441 South. And until this very moment, I never opened my mouth about the dangers and wonders of that now infamous evening. See, my buddy, he's a congressman and deals cards on the side. Me, I pick guitar around here most nights, just telling my stories to anyone who'll believe me. And I guess you ought to know, well, the titty shut down. They turned it into a church, later a pound, and finally a karaoke bar before it was finally finished. And Quarter, she works a toll booth on some highway. The alphabet twins, they balance their lives some way. And I'm proud to say, sweet candy, she married her a dentist. Ain't no one saying that it's pretty, but it's always a pretty damn good time. At that mountain city titty, right on across that old Rayburn County line. Ain't no one saying that it's pretty, but it's always a pretty damn good time. At that mountain city titty, right on across that old Rayburn County line.
I feel like this song puts you up into like the Robert Earl Keen and prime kind of echelon. I think it's just a matter of time. Somebody's going to hear this song and they're going to be like, that's a classic. We're playing that every Christmas.
Wow. Okay. I mean, head's kind of getting big. I think this headset's about to pop off. Because, yeah, those are definitely my songwriting heroes. I love those guys a lot.
So in terms of your other songs, is the style similar to this song?
I would say yes and no. I have a couple more songs. I've got a song off the EP called Bum Wine. You know, as you've said, I'm a high school English teacher. So one Thanksgiving, I was on break listening to a lot of Townes Van Zandt live at the Old Quarter. I mean, in my mind, that is the perfect show. That's what I would always want to be, is just me and my guitar and you know, folks listen to what you're trying to say and communicate. And I think he really, really crushed it on that album. So he's got a song called Talking Thunderbird Blues. And I was like, what is this Thunderbird wine that he keeps talking about? And so I did some more research and I found out what Thunderbird was. And in disappointing me, it did not disappoint. I mean, that is just some hideous foul stuff.
That's the kind you get at the gas station, I think.
If you can still get it, man. I mean, it was, it's weird because it's like sort of yellowish and intent, but then when you drink it, it turns your tongue purple. And, you know, Keith Richards says it wasn't so much the bad acid at Altamont that, you know, got the Hell's Angels where it was Thunderbird wine. He says it's like the vilest stuff. And if Keith Richards is telling you that, then you better pay attention. But yeah, so I was listening to lot of Towns Van Zandt, and I wrote that song Bum Wine, and it's sort of similar to MCT in that it's kind of talking blues and then a singing chorus. But then some other songs are, you know, pretty straightforward narratives that are, you know, not, there's, I've written these songs to be moving. They're, you know, songs about folks struggling and things like that. I've got a song called Belton Bridge that I haven't recorded in the studio, but I mean, it's a place down around Banks County on the sort of Banks Habersham line. And, you know, my grandpa really did take me fishing there. That's the only part of the song that's true. But then later they had to close the place down because people were getting killed down there. Drug deals. I mean, it was turned into kind of a rough place. And I was driving to work one morning. I just had an idea. I want to write a song about that place.
Wow. What do you hope people get from your music?
Joy. I mean, yeah. I mean, it's, you know, I don't know. It's, you just want people to feel connected. I mean, I think that's part of what we all want. I mean, you want to express yourself as an artist, but yeah, you want people to hear that. And I mean, you know, it, like I said, you know, to hear your story about MCT and for it to be so on with what I wrote, you know, really before I even knew you,
mm-hmm.
and to hear that story for the first time, I'm like, wow, man, that's pretty cool. So I mean, if I can replicate those kind of experiences, you know, while I'm making music, and you know, so people don't feel alone. That's why we all make art, you know, or enjoy art or listen to things. I feel pretentious saying the word art, but I mean that really is what you try to do, because I want to be mindful of my craft and try to be deliberate about the things I'm trying to get across.
Do you write otherwise, like poems or anything, or prose?
Yeah, really poorly. I wrote another friend of mine that really kind of introduced me to drive-by truckers and particularly Isbel. He's a real big movie buff. And together we wrote a screenplay that was sort of a, I don't even know how you say it. I always say biopic, but I hear people saying biopic. Anyway, we have a movie that is telling the life of Graham Parsons. We wrote a screenplay, I should say. And I mean, I think it's a pretty terrible screenplay, but the people that, you know, produce Walk the Line, they took a look at it. So we had, you know, a couple of folks that have done some things.
How do you even get it in front of somebody?
I don't, there's a whole process that my friend's much more familiar with. I mean, but basically, you know, you write a lot, what amounts to almost like a cover letter, and you send it to the mail, and maybe they read it, maybe they don't, you know, and maybe they write you back, and maybe they don't.
Huh. Do you think, or for you writing, since you're an English teacher and you write, is it a struggle, or does it come easy for you?
That's probably relative. I mean, to someone that's a non-writer, they would probably think I write easily, but no, I think writing is really laborious. You know, and it depends on the time. A lot of the good songs do come fast. But like I said, you know, MCT might have taken me, you know, 3 hours to get down on paper while I'm driving home. But at the same time, I've been thinking and feeling about that song for a year.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's a weird, cool alchemy.
Like you go through all the wrong words and just eventually the right ones kind of fall into place?
On the great days, yeah. Sometimes I think the wrong words are still in there. But but you don't want to let that keep you from singing the song.
Yeah.
A lot of my hero songwriters, you know, they'll record something and then I'll hear them perform it live and there's just a couple lines different. And when I go back and I look at why, usually their live version is truer to the totality of, I think, what they're working toward. So I take some comfort in that.
I wonder about, like, music is a bit of a mystery in some way, and songwriting isn't exactly poetry.
No.
Because this is what I've been thinking about. It's like when you write a poem, you have a verse or a line, and it goes to the next line, goes to the next line. In music, those words, like the end of that line, can also be the beginning of the next line, and you can take a word and stretch it to make a whole new other syllables and make it fit and work, whereas if it was just written on paper and you were reading it like a poem, it wouldn't.
Right.
Does that make sense?
It does. And I mean, the fact that it's sung and you can sort of hear, you know, a singer's inflection, how you emphasize and what pitch can do and rhythm. And I mean, those things are present in a live reading of poetry. But in a weird way, I find that songwriting can be more forgiving. There are things that you can write down on paper to sing that might be a little bit cliche or overdone in you know, a print poem. And maybe that's maybe something you can compare that to is sort of the difference between stage craft, stage acting, and then film acting. You know, on stage you have to be very big and bold so that the people in the back row can see you, whereas in film, you know, the cameras can get in really close, and so you're able to do a more nuanced kind of approach.
I think I like the more complicated I really respect good songwriting or lyrics. I find myself like you hear a song and you hear the word blue and above, and you know the next word's going to be I love or something like that. It's like, oh man, you could have done better.
Right. That's 100% true. And I mean, I think when I'm writing a song, that is maybe the forefront of what I'm thinking is they cannot know what word is coming. Because if they do, I feel like I've cheated, I've failed.
Right.
And so you always want that next turn that happens to rhyme to be a surprise.
Right.
And the cool thing is trying to get that rhyme in a way that isn't hackneyed and, you know, overdone, it leads you to some really cool places. That's the beauty of I think rhyme and even rhyming poetry, which is kind of out of vogue. You know, I mean, I think most of what's getting consumed now, you know, in the academic world is all free verse, but poetry, it's about sound and rhythm, but sometimes it's about rhyme, and I think that makes you go some really great places.
I've been impressed that Zach Bryan wrote a song that rhymes with orange.
You think he did that on purpose?
That's random. He's like the only person in the world. You can't say that anymore. Between the songwriting and music, because you've studied music and you're a musician, you're also a writer. Are they two separate crafts, or are they like one craft for you?
I don't know. That's kind of a cool question. I think when I succeed in doing a song the way I want to, I think they're one. And when I struggle, it's I'm approaching it as two different things. Jason Isbell said, he said a lot of cool stuff. But even now, I think an interview I heard with him, he said that, you know, if he could, he would sit around and play guitar 10 hours a day. That's nothing to him. You know, that's a joy, that's a release. But even in the echelon of songwriter that he is, writing songs is still work. Mm. You have to make yourself do it. And you know, obviously on a much lower level, that's true for me. You know, I would sit around and play guitar all day if I could. But when it comes time to write, you know, maybe one time out of 50, I'm inspired. And, you know, I've got something I've got to get down. But, you know, the other times it's just work, man. You're like, you know, I haven't written in a while. I've got a good idea. It's time to put some legs underneath it. And then you just kind of bang it out as best as you can.
Do you kind of visualize or hear the whole concept and then figure out how to put it together? Or do you start with, like, one phrase or one note or like three notes and then go, oh, I'm going to make a song out of that?
Usually it's an idea for kind of a hook, an idea. I'll have an idea of a story I want to tell or an emotion I want to create around a certain context. And then I'll, you know, try to find a way to make that work. And sometimes lyrics come first. Most of the time I'd say the music comes first and you get the words behind that.
The music comes first.
Usually.
So you're like practicing and you kind of come up with a new instrumental that has some kind of a emotion to it or feeling, and then figure out how to tell a story with it?
Yeah, I'll start singing some kind of nonsense melody along with it. I'll be like, okay, that's going a cool place. How should this song feel? And when I figure out what kind of emotional tone I want in the song, then the song starts to kind of begin to write itself.
Okay.
But until I figure out how I want people to feel when they hear that, or how I want to feel when I sing it, it's a lot of work, and it feels like I'm butting my head. It feels kind of artificial. I can come down with words that rhyme that I might think are clever and creative to me, you know, but when the tone feels right, that's when it feels like real and I'm expressing something.
Have you ever collaborated, like singer-songwriter?
A little bit.
Is that difficult?
For me, it is.
Feels like a group project in high school to me.
You know, I don't know. I mean, I'm kind of a prideful son of a gun, so I have a hard time letting the control go. I've written a couple songs. Usually it's, you know, I'll be wanting to tell somebody's story. And okay. I'll say, and, you know, I'll take notes on them. And then I'll go back and I'll write a little bit. And I'll say, okay, in this situation, what would you feel? Or am I going down the right path here? So I wrote I co-wrote a song with my bass player, Jeff, that was for his daughter.
Mm.
And, you know, just him, you know, at that time we were riding to work together because he teaches English too. And so, you know, things would just come up as you're guys, you know, driving down the road, things you worry about with family. And so we ended up kind of building what I think is a really cool song. And I probably handled most of the poetry on that. But, I mean, he's still my co-writer because it's his story that I'm trying to tell, or my version of his story that I'm telling with his permission.
Okay.
And, you know, he helped with, you know, some of the ideas and the emotions.
If you look, like, let's say, I don't know, 5, 10, 15, 20 years down the road, what's your hope for your music?
People to know it, for it to still be around.
Like if you, I know people going viral on TikTok these days and things like that, but let's just say you blew up. Would you quit teaching? Start touring?
Probably so, because I wouldn't. Live performance is such a different thing. And I mean, both, you know, for all parties involved.
Do you enjoy live performance?
I do. Particularly when I'm singing my own stuff. So yeah, that is good. And I mean, that used to not be the case. It was just something I had to do to get it over there. I used to have pretty bad case, and I still get nervy, you know, but no, I really enjoy it, especially when things are breaking right and you can see that you're connecting with people. That's
and they're reacting.
Yeah.
Somehow. That's one of the things that inspired me to do this project, because I've always been an artist, photographer and whatnot. And I felt like musicians were a kindred spirit, or singer-songwriter were kindred spirits, in that they have to go stand in front of people and, like, be vulnerable.
Yeah.
And I think we take that for granted. I don't want to do that.
I don't know that I want to do that, but that's what you got to do if you want the satisfaction of that real authentic connection, you know. And you and I, we've been to shows where, you know, the performer's phoning it in. And I mean, you're still, you know, maybe you're hearing your radio song that you came to hear, but you can tell that person's not enjoying it.
Yeah.
And then you have those shows where, you know, you feel it, and it's great. That's the best.
Yeah, I think that's one difference for me between a performer who just sings other people's songs and people who sing their own work or their own creation. It's more meaningful to me anyway. So what all instruments do you play? I see a guitar and I see like a bag of harmonicas.
That's my collection. You know, I figure if I walk in with 7, maybe one of them will sound halfway good. When I perform live, I do guitar and harmonica. Mainly because I don't think I'm much of a lead player on guitar. So, I mean, I didn't want all my songs to be, you know, 2 minutes and 12 seconds. So I got to find some way to take a break. And so I started cultivating sort of my own harmonica style.
What do you mean by a lead player?
You know, like MCT, it's a lot of finger picking, you know, what we would call Travis picking. And so you keep the bass going with the thumb, that sort of establishes your rhythm, and then you do some syncopated melody, you know, on the higher strings.
Wow, you lost me.
you play what you're singing, kind of, and you go boom, boom, boom underneath it, right? And you know, really, that comes from my love of Townes Van Zandt. He's the he's the guitarist that just really blew my mind. First time I ever really heard Towns that I was aware of was his cover of Dead Flowers that they roll on the credits of Big Lebowski.
Oh.
And, you know, I just watched Lebowski for the first time, which, you know, that's a cool thing to do. And then this guy starts singing Dead Flowers, which is, you know, probably my favorite Stone song. But he's doing it in a style that's markedly different. You know, Towns has his own sort of style of singing, and it's probably not traditionally what people call pretty. But, I mean, I was like, man, I have... And I heard what he was doing on guitar, and I was like, I think I could do that. And it's actually, that's... Towns' version of Dead Flowers is really what made me start writing songs as an adult. You know, wow. I wrote songs in, like, a goofy band when I was in high school, but... But no, his cover of Dead Flowers directly is the first song I wrote as an adult. That it just kind of led to that. And I kind of became obsessed with that, just that kind of style of play, and I still am.
Let's talk about that, your inspirations. You live in southern Appalachia, northeast Georgia, and you've mentioned some people already, but who, let's talk about what kind of music and musicians are the ones that kind of light your fire.
Well, we've talked about, we definitely talked about John Prine. I mean, he is certainly at the top for me. Love Jason Isbell's craft, and he's a phenomenal lead guitarist. It's kind of unfair how good he is at everything. It's aggravating. Towns Van Zandt was, you know, really...
Is he from Texas?
He is. He's from a little parish called Dido. And the Van Zandts are kind of an old family there. I got to go play one of my songs out at his grave a couple of years back. It started raining while I was out there. It was really cool. Another big influence, particularly early on, was Mike Cooley of the Drive-By Truckers. He's got a song that he also plays out of a C shape, like Towns' Dead Flowers, Panties in Your Purse. And he's doing a couple of the same things that Towns does on his live take. And when I heard that, I was like, well, I know what he's... It was like one of the first times on guitar that I heard somebody doing, and I like instantly knew what they were doing because I hadn't developed in my knowledge of it at that point. And so, yeah, you know, Mike Cooley, and then I got into the rest of the band with Patterson, and, you know, I love that. Of course, you know, Hank Williams writes these deceptively simple songs that just, like, break your heart. He wrecks you with a line. He's definitely a big influence. I love Josh Ritter, who's much more folky, but I think he's an incredible, smart lyricist, great voice, good guitarist.
So these are not Appalachian mountain music type influences, I would say.
No, probably not. They probably break a little more folk. You know, I love like the Leuven Brothers, right? You know, Graham Parsons when I was... writing that movie and was big into Graham. You know, Graham's technically speaking, is a Georgia boy. He was born down in Waycross, but he grew up in Florida before he went to L.A. and all that. You know, but he's big on the Leuven Brothers. And so I did my stint with them. And I think for me, more than a sound, it's a sensibility. You know, I'm not a good enough picker to like burn it up like those bluegrass boys do. So okay. if I can write songs that are inspired by the mountains and the people that I see living their lives here, mm-hmm. to me that's the way that I strike out at.
And thus far, they aren't they? The songs that you've written and recorded are kind of local.
They are. You know, Belton Bridge, and then Carolina Life was written about a couple that I briefly knew when. You know, my father-in-law had a cabin up in, up around, we'll say Burnsville.
Do you want to play another song?
Yeah, I'd love to, man. Well, since we're talking about Carolina Life, let me do that one. This was very early, and this is one that I have a studio recording of, but I haven't released it yet. So I don't know. Does that make it an exclusive or something?
Yeah, you heard it here first, people.
Old Jack came from Western Carolina. lived his whole life there, except the war. Drew his paycheck from the mills, from the mine. Like the rivers where the rocks he'd walk his floor. See, I know there's lots of places that I ain't never seen. And I've only loved this one girl all my life. But I know my faith and know my friends have seen the mountains and the trees. And this Carolina life, it's been all right. They raised two boys who shared a single room. One moved to Dallas and the other never called. So Melissa'd go for long walks by the creek, while old Jack would talk to pictures on the wall. See, I know there's lots of places that I ain't never seen. But I've only loved your mama all my life. And I know my faith, I know my friends have seen the mountains and the trees. And this Carolina life, it's been all right. But that white coat Asheville doctor didn't look him in the eye when he gave him just 6 weeks and then the bill. So they rolled the windows down, they smoked all the way back home, and watched the sunset fade to gray behind a hill. Old Jack came from Western Carolina, and he lived his whole life there, except the war. When I saw him yesterday for the last time, we sat counting cars go by from his porch. He said, I know there's lots of places that I won't never see. And I've only loved this one girl all my life. But I had the rain fall on my back, I felt the sunshine kiss my cheek. And this Carolina life, it's been all right. Yeah, this Carolina life, it's been all right.
Wow, that's awesome, dude.
Thanks, man. I appreciate that.
What's the best way for people to support your craft?
You know, I really would appreciate the streams. I mean, just listen to my music. Share my music if you love it, if you like it. If you think it's got something to say to somebody you know, then, you know, yeah, I'd really appreciate that. You know, if you get a chance, if you're local, if you're passing through and you see that I'm playing, you know, I'd appreciate you coming out, giving me a listen. You know, particularly, I mean, if you're hearing about it here, I'd certainly, we'd both love to know about that, right? I don't have any, you know, any hard copy of anything that I've recorded yet, but that's in the works. You know, of course, that's a lot more money in my pocket, and I mean, kind of right now, I think the game plan for me, really the long plan, I don't know that I'll ever be a guy that's, you know, out there totally on my own on the road, but if I was able to build enough, a big enough following that I could maybe, you know, end up opening for some of my heroes and to have the road experience that way and to play in some of those crowds and, you know, I think, you know, really that would be my dream.
Yeah. Wow. Is Spotify kind of like the main streaming source nowadays?
It is. I was, reading that, predominantly, a lot of people sort of measure your, how recognizable you are by your number of streams. Unfortunately, they're one of the companies, that pay the least per stream, which I think most people are trying to get their music in front of people. We're willing to, take that, just to try to get it out there for people because, with a lot of amazing software, there's all kinds of ways to get your stuff on multiple platforms.
Right. I've heard people say that it is at least a good way to discover new artists.
Oh, it's really cool. It's in some ways I'm still surprised at how smart it is that, just the people that ended up kind of being on, Bryant Tench Radio, I was like, well, heck yeah, I love this guy. I ran into people that I didn't even know that I was like, oh, yeah, I see why, the algorithm picked this person for me. So, we talk about people hacking the algorithm and all of that. People try to write formulaic songs that'll stick. But, if you write good songs that people want to hear and that you can be proud of, then I think, it's still going to figure it out if it's meant to be, right?
Yeah.
And who wants to play something that you're not proud of?
You've ever heard the book The Alchemist?
I've heard of it. I don't teach it. I've never read it.
I don't want to spoil it for people, but the gist is the young guy goes in search of the treasure, and he's told, he basically goes around the world digging for the treasure, and in the end, the treasure is in his backyard. And so when I started the local exposure thing, I call it the Alchemist Principle. I just kind of made it up. It's like, I'm going to stop fantasizing and wishing I was somewhere else in the world, some exotic place. And if I could just take a picture of that or this or be in that place, maybe I could get famous or people would like what I do. And so I just said, screw it. I'm going to dig for treasure right where I am. And so for me, it's super cool to be right here. I live out of my truck, but I live out of the woods and, just down the road from here. But to be, right here in my backyard and to dig up people and hear like your story and your songwriting, it's like, it's really cool. It's kind of a confirmation that, that's the right choice. Just start where you are.
Pretty cool how that works out, right?
Yeah.
But I mean, it takes that leap of faith and it takes honesty.
Yeah. Well, man, we're going to have a Spotify playlist of everybody that we talk with. So you'll be on that as well. And sweet. Hopefully people listen. You'll get some new followers and fans. And I feel like, man, that MCT song, I just have a good feeling about it.
Dude, I hope you're right, man.
You're going to blow up, right. Or somebody else is going to cover it. They're going to like, hey, here's $1 million. I want to cover this song.
I'm cool with that, too.
Bryant Tench, man, thanks for coming on and hanging out and having a beer with me.
Man, I've had a ball. Thanks for having me, dude.
Thank you.
You and me, baby, got married pretty young. Should've run off, but we stayed where we're from. Wasn't a year you had a boy who had my name. When the factory shut, things got tight. We was low on love and long on the fight. The only time you reaching for someone to blame. Ain't much for me and Mitchell. Ain't much for me and Mitchell. Ain't much for me and Mitchell now. Fast cash, a quick run to Canton, no questions asked. But when them blue lights flashed, it was me who was going down.
Did 3.5 cause I wouldn't roll. I got out, came back home, found he'd taken the boy, moved with the folks across town. Ain't much for me and Mitchell. There ain't much for me and Mitchell. Ain't much for me and Mitchell now. Ain't much for me and Mitchell. Ain't much for me and Mitchell. Ain't much for me and Mitchell now. Parked in the street when he ran towards me. Slung him in the cab, strapped him in his seat. I'll be damned if you're taking my boy away. But we hit a roadblock at the county line. I had my hands in the air, still they kept firing. I was covered in blood, got a wish it been mine that day. It ain't much for me and Mitchell. Ain't much for me and Mitchell. Ain't much for me, Mitchell now. Ain't much for me and Mitchell. Ain't much for me and Mitchell. Ain't much for me, Mitchell now.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of the Local Exposure Podcast. Hey, make sure to check out our other series called Hiker Trash. You can find it on your favorite podcast app or at our website, localexposuremagazine.com. This project was made possible by a gift from Sarah and Ron Johnson. If you would like to support this or a future project, send us an email at localexposure.contact@gmail.com. Thank you and see you next time.